Hey, good evening, everybody. We're the Tri-State Sports Guys coming to you live from the Perry Avenue Bar and Grill in beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma, along with my co-host, Neil Lynch. Neil, how we doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Hanging in there. Tony D's got some car troubles, but we're hanging in there. We're hoping with our next contract he's going to get some sort of car involved or whatever it is.
We just need to get Jiffy Lube as a sponsor. And we're,
that's
we're
what I mean. I mean, look, NDB Media needs to step up their game and help us out a little bit. So let's get right into it. We're watching the Yankee game in the background here. There's Cano just went yard, made it 5-1. So let's start with baseball. We've been starting with football a lot lately, but I think we got to devote a lot of time to baseball. I mean, we all assumed with this, dual wild card system that the end of the season was going to be exciting. And although we knew the teams that were going to make it, the 10 teams, we knew, a couple days ago. Well, really, last night was when it was official, but you kind of got a good sense a few days ago. Still a lot of excitement. And starting with this afternoon's game with the Oakland A's, and we got to get to that first. I mean, the Oakland A's, I picked them in one of my bold predictions, and this was after seeing their game in Japan, just one game. I said, that is the worst lineup I've ever seen in my life. Seth Smith batting third, Johnny Gomes didn't clean up. I'm like, how are these guys ever going to win games? They come out, they shock the world the whole season long, and you're like, wow, they're actually going to make be a wild card team here. That's an amazing feat for this team. They had 74 wins last year. They go out, they're 10 games left in the season, they're 4 games back. Battle their way through that first 6 games, get it down. They're down 2 games with 3 to play against the first place Texas Rangers, back-to-back American League champions. And they go out and sweep them at home. And today they're down 5-1 in the third inning. And they go out and they win 12-5. And it was surreal watching the game on the MLB Network. They switched over to watching, the final inning. It was amazing. It was one of the better sport moments I've seen. I mean, the crowd was crazy. The players, didn't know what they were doing, Guys like Cliff Pennington that had been there a while during some hard times here. And it's an amazing comeback. And I don't know whether to give them more credit or to put the blame on the Rangers. The Rangers have just completely fallen apart.
I think you can go both ways with that. You can put a little bit of the onus on the Rangers and put a lot of the momentum and the heat on the A's, running through and really taking that spirit that they have, that their players embody, and it's that confidence, it's that momentum that you want heading into the postseason. And you look at the Rangers, and I didn't watch much of the Rangers this year, but when I did watch them, I didn't get that kind of spirit or passion that you do when you watch the A's.
Yeah, I agree with you. And they were, the Rangers were a lot like the Angels, and you and I were talking before the show about how surprised we were, how bad the Angels basically, the last week of the season was meaningless because they had fallen out of it. And, it's like you look at their parts and you say, man, look how much better of a team in every aspect of the game.
Right.
This Rangers team is in the Oakland Athletics. And, it was just this fight in the Oakland A's. And we started seeing it maybe in June. It started to come around. You're like, look at the A's. They're making this little run here. And they're in the, where are the A's coming from? They went on that winning streak, and they beat up on the Yankees, in the summer. And you started saying, I think they swept in 4 games or something in July. And you started saying, is this team possibly for real? It's just amazing that a franchise can consistently have young pitching always in their system. I mean, they, as good as the Rays pitching has been, the A's have been this way since the 90s. I mean, they just continuously produce stud pitchers. It's just amazing. And then, they trade Cahill away. They get a good pitcher back. He was great for them. It's just an amazing story. And now you look at it, if the Yankees lose, and they're up 5-1, if they lose, you look at it, the Oakland A's are the one seed. It's the one seed in the American League, the Oakland Athletics. In this league that's got the Detroit Tigers, and they're in the same division as the Rangers and the Angels.
The A's were not in the discussion at all. Even in the beginning of September or mid-September, they were kind of a fringe team that people were.
They were the Pirates.
Yeah.
They were the Pirates. It was like, this surprising team. They were the Pirates. They were the Pirates, the Orioles. But at least the Orioles, they do spend money. I mean, I don't think their payrolls were even close.
Yeah.
Tip your cap to them. That's just fantastic. And it's good for baseball. Because that is, even though they don't sell games out when they're not doing well, that is a passionate fan base, and it's good to have the A's back in it.
12-14 in attendance. To give you an idea of what's going on out there.
Yeah, I mean, it was,
that's got to be difficult to go out there day in, day out into a half-empty ballpark or, and to put up, to get pumped and to get excited and to give it all, leave it out on the field when you have empty seats. But, you know, that's one thing about Oakland is, like, when they do start coming around and they get in the town, the city starts to recognize that they got talent and they are winning and have a chance to go, they're going to rally and they're going to be at the ballpark and they're going to get loud.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be an interesting playoffs, and it's like, this is the most exciting time to, you know, even if the Mets are not in it, I just think teams like the Orioles and the A's are going to make it exciting. And you know, I think you're going to have a lot of people pulling for them.
When we
get started this coming weekend.
And then you look at the Rangers. I mean, the Rangers don't have that stud pitcher to go out and win a one game playoff.
Yeah, and that makes me think that you're going to see an early exit from Texas.
Yeah, I mean, even if they are able to, and it looks like, you know, I will give you updates as the show goes on, but it looks like they're going to be playing the Orioles, and I know the Orioles don't have a stud pitcher either. You know, neither of those teams are made for a one-game playoff. They don't have a Verlander or, you know, a Jared Weaver or one of those type of guys. So you're going to see two guys pitching, and it's probably going to be like Darvish and, I don't know, Chen pitched, I think, Monday, so he might be ready for it. I don't know who's going to be pitching for the Orioles, but, you know, you look at the two teams, how the Orioles have come down the stretch. I mean, if the Texas Rangers don't make it to the divisional playoffs, that's a huge blow to them. Coming off of two back-to-back, World Series appearances. They lost last year in heartbreaking fashion. They basically, I think they led, I know they said today that this is the first time all season the A's have been in first place. So I'm pretty sure that basically they went wire to wire, the Rangers, until literally the last day of the season.
Oh,
because,
God.
I mean, who else was in first? I mean, the Angels came off to a bad start. So you look at the Rangers, they went wire to wire as the best team in their division, let alone they had the best record in American League 2 days ago.
And
now they have a play-in game.
It's weird. It's reminiscent of the Phillies, both when they stormed back in September, I think it was in 08, and they went on to the World Series.
Yeah.
To win the World Series. And then if you look at the Phillies of, I think it was 11 or 10, when they were pretty much owned the NL East, and they go in the playoffs and they get knocked out.
Yeah.
And they had like 100 some odd wins, I think it was the most in the bigs.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at the A's. The A's are the 08 Phillies. And
yep.
You have the Rangers, who are like the 10 or the 11 Phillies.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that pretty much coasted the whole way through. And I think, you know, when you look at the Yankees and what's going on with them, as a fan, you've gone through a roller coaster of emotions. They were up big, and then they had to fight. But if I'm a Yankee fan, I kind of like that they're fighting right now.
100%.
Because I don't know that you want to go into the playoffs coasting like the Rangers did.
And I think I 100% agree with you. If you're a Yankee fan, you got to love the way that this last month of the season played out.
I mean, it's not easy on the heart, but.
But, that, I mean, Yankee fans are so used to not having to worry about it. I mean, there was a time in mid-September they were worried about getting into the playoffs. You know, there was a time when you're looking, they're looking at, we've got to make sure the Rays are out of the way. So now, you know, they big series, I don't care how bad the Red Sox have been, the win last night. When's the last time the Yankees had a win like they had last night to get into the playoffs?
I've never seen them that excited. I mean,
it's amazing.
Just the atmosphere and the environment, it caught me off guard.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand that, you know, these are do or die games, and there's a lot of intensity, but I don't know that you saw a lot of that over the past 2 weeks or whatever. And, you know, to have guys that you don't normally depend on, you know, your Grandersons, your Canoes, and,
yeah.
You know.
A-Rod hasn't had an extra base hit in 67 at bat.
Well, and, you know, I watched part of the game last night in the city, and he hit a ball to left center.
Yeah, he thought it was gone.
And he thought it was gone, and Ellsbury runs it down and pumps his fist, and you just saw the look of like, wow, I'm no longer on steroids.
Oh, when he hit it, he definitely, I thought it was gone. You know, Michael Kay thought it was gone. And,
he was just confused. He looked lost. He was like, wow, I'm
he
a shadow that, of
he's hit that ball 500 times before, and 500 other times it's gone out of the park.
Yep, yep.
And it really is. And so, but that all being said, I mean, I think you what you've seen over the last couple of weeks, the good thing is you've seen Ichiro, who was like the consummate team player when he first got here, didn't mind sitting back and forth. He basically went out and took that spot where now he's the everyday guy. Now there's a legitimate question as whether Andrew Jones even makes the playoff roster. I don't know why you would put him on the playoff roster.
Especially after Ibanez is performing.
You got Ibanez, and you're going to have Nunez as your right-handed bat.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you don't need to carry – in the American League, it's like you need to carry a lot of backups for different – you know, for defensive purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think you're going to see Nunez DHing against lefties, Ibanez DHing against righties. I'd rather have a guy like, Gardner on the playoff roster for if you're going to, you know, for defensive purposes, for speed. Granted, he's not going to give you any offense. I don't know if, he's ready to hit or, with his elbow, but I don't know what role a guy like Andrew Jones plays on the playoff roster. And that you, if you hadn't been in a battle like they were in, you wouldn't have found that out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if Andrew Jones has kept kind of sputtering around, but they were up, you know, 6, 7, 8 games, it wouldn't have mattered.
Mm-hmm.
But now you got to see who when we asked them in the clutch, who's the guy we went to, and you saw, you know, I mean, Ichiro's hitting .325 as a Yankee, and a lot of that damage was done over the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
So there was, you know, there's a stretch where he was literally carrying them. So I think it's nothing but good stuff for the Yankees that they were able to do that. It's going to be really exciting. I actually was hoping that they would have lost and the Orioles would win because obviously exciting for the one game playoff to see what happens, and it would have been, you know, exciting, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But it's going to be super exciting. But
I don't want to say there would have been a death knell for the Yankees to be the wild card, second wild card, but oh man, I don't know that they have this. I'm so not sold on their pitching staff.
Oh yeah, you can't.
They have. On paper, you think they have these great arms that can really go out there and give you astonishing games.
Yeah.
But they're not. They don't have the consistency that you want out of your rotation. And so, you know, for them to probably have to throw CC or who they throw in that one game playoff.
The one game would probably be CC, but tomorrow's game would probably have to be still huge. Like if they were to have to play the one game play-in game
right.
to get to the wild card game, and they lost, I mean, tomorrow would probably be Phil Hughes.
Yeah.
And then they'd probably bring CC back on 3 days rest. But CC's last three starts have been fantastic ever since we came here on here and agreed with Osama. He's just been unbelievable. So you're going into the playoffs. But what's interesting is, you know, they're gonna be the one seed. Playing the wild card team, but the way the format is, and we talked about it before the season, O and I, about, you know, they rushed this playoff format and the two wild card teams through, and they're going to open up with two games on the road. And, you know the Yankees, I don't have the numbers in front of them, but they dominate at Yankee Stadium. And so, if they're asked to go to Baltimore for two games or even Texas for two games, you gotta steal a game. You can't rely on coming back and winning three in a row. So it's almost like, you know, you don't want that. You know, it's almost better to be in the Tigers' position.
Yeah.
The Tigers are sitting there and you know, they didn't turn it on all season long. You know, they when is it gonna turn on? They were almost like the Angels, except that they actually did turn it on. And now they're sitting there, they know what they're doing. They don't have they have a traditional format and all. That's a bigger deal than Yankee fans are making it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
That you're gonna have this one seed, which is all fine and good, but you're either gonna have to go to Baltimore for two games or go to Texas for two games. And Texas, if they are to win that playoff game, now they're angry. You know, do you want to go out there and face, you know, Beltre and Michael Young and Jay Hammond and Nelson Cruz and those guys out in Texas?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I could see that being a big problem for the Yankees, and especially like you're saying, pitching wise. I know they keep talking about splitting up the lefties, and so they'd want to go, CC, Kuroda, Pettit, game three. But Pettit, I would trust Pettit, even though he's only had a couple starts since he's come back, more than Kuroda. Kuroda's pitching tonight, but
Well, did you hear what he said?
Mm-mm.
I think this came out today that Kuroda actually hates playing baseball.
Oh, okay. Like Curtis Martin hates playing football. Okay, so he doesn't like the sport.
Yeah.
That's the thing with Jack Greinke. Okay.
It was something about his upbringing in Japan where it was like he just, the treatment that he received from his coaches, you know, from whoever, was so severe and brutal that it just made him hate baseball.
That two-seamer, that's just a blessing and a curse. That sinker he's got, man.
So who knows how that'll translate on the field. It could be, like, you know, the point where maybe we Americans are a little too lax with him. We need to, like, break out the whip.
Yeah, yeah.
I
don't know either, but I did not heard that. But yeah, so I mean, how would you set up your rotation? Would you want to? I mean, I don't understand the thought of splitting up lefties as far as rotation goes. You go with your number one, you go with your number two.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Yankee fans would feel most comfortable with Pettit out there game two. God forbid CC loses game one, and you got, you know, really your season on the line. I'd rather have Andy Pettit out there than a guy who hates baseball.
Yeah.
You know, and so that what I'm coming to on this is, you know, as great of a story as the Oakland Athletics are, you can't really be in a better spot than the Detroit Tigers, saying to yourself, okay, we're in the playoffs. We had a rough season. You know, we disappointed some people, but now we're sitting in the playoffs. And we're going to play the Oakland A's, and we got Verlander and Fister, who's proven he could do it in a big spot, and you know, Max Scherzer, and we're going to get against these guys who have, you know, eventually this run you're on, it does drain you, and do they have a crash? You can't ask for a better scenario for the Detroit Tigers, you know what I mean, than what they've got sitting in front of them.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. There was a dark horse team that, you know, squeezed in, and you know, I think that they're just they have Miggy, they have Wheeler, they have Verlander.
Can we quickly talk about Miguel Cabrera and his triple crown?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still legitimate arguments everywhere about Mike Trout, and I think Mike Trout was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. How could you? The guy won a triple crown, and with a million clutch hits. Down the stretch of a team that made the playoffs, to come from behind in September and make the playoffs, how much more valuable can you be? He's leading the American League in like six categories. You know, it's not just like he's leading the league in everything. And so then the idea that some of these guys, including Peter Gammon, is saying, well, but you know how many runs that Trout takes away with his glove and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, the guy won the triple crown on a playoff team that came back in September. I don't want to hear it. He's the MVP.
Yeah,
how could you pop? And I think Trout had one of the best seasons, obviously for someone that young ever, but one of the better offensive seasons and all-around seasons ever. But when's the last time we've seen a triple crown? 67? And this is a feat that people talk about. That's not going to happen in this era because you have specialized guys like Adam Dunn that only hit home runs. You're not going to see it, you know, and nobody could sustain it. You know, remember at the beginning of the year, Josh Hamilton was hitting 450 and he was leading the league and everything, and he crashed. Nobody could sustain it. This guy got better and better as the season went on.
Yeah, but, you know, there are people making arguments that the Triple Crown is an outdated.
Those are stupid people. you forgot to say the word stupid people.
Well, no.
What's outdated about the fact that they lead the league in home runs, RBIs, and batting average?
Home runs, I understand. Batting average, I understand. RBIs, I don't understand.
Why is that? How do you not understand that?
That is so dependent, and, you know, I have to give props to KFC at Barstool for bringing this up. RBIs is dependent on your team. The team around you. You got to think about where Miguel's batting the lineup.
So then you could say the thing about runs then. Mike Trout, the one thing about Mike Trout is he produces so many runs. He scores so many runs. If there's not guys driving him in, then it's the same thing about runs. I don't understand that argument.
So how come that can't be part of the – well, can't that be part of the argument then?
What?
RBIs versus runs? See what I'm saying?
What's more?
So we're saying, well, oh, Triple Crown lights out, hands down. But, you know, if you put Miguel in that situation where he's batting where Trout's batting, is he going to have as many runs? So, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you put Trout where Miguel is batting, is he going to have as many RBIs?
No.
You just know that?
Yeah, I know that because he's not going to hit 44 home runs. And he's not, I mean, you just look at, for me, it's much harder to get a hit with guys in scoring position, especially when you're Miguel Cabrera and nobody wants Miguel Cabrera to beat you.
And not taking into consideration Trout's speed, the fact that he will steal bases and he's able to score runs on extra base hits, and whereas Miguel needs
– still, somebody still needs to drive in. Somebody still – I mean, how many runs did he have? He had a lot, maybe 20. I don't know what he had.
No, he had like 34 maybe.
Trout had like 34 home runs?
I think he's done 30.
We got to check that out. That's what we need Tony D. Because I'm going to call BS on that. If I were to guess off the top of my head, I'd take 23 home runs. from Mike Trout. But we're gonna look this up now. But I just don't I don't understand. So you're not gonna put any stock into RBIs. You're not gonna put any stock into the fact that his team made the playoffs and that he was a
30 yard jobs, 83 RBIs, 49 stolen bases.
Cool.
He's come on. I mean, he's putting you in a situation to score runs. Whereas I don't know if he flip flopped the situation, right? That Miguel would have put up the numbers that he did.
So you like Mike Trout?
I like Mike Trout.
For the MVP award.
For the MVP award. I mean, he's just an exciting player, and he's a five-tool guy. And I think that, you know, Miguel's got a great bat, but in terms of taking over a game in more ways than one, I think Trout can do that. I don't know that Miguel can do that.
I don't think it needs to be, you don't have to be that multidimensional to take over a game. People fall in love with all the tools and this and that. And granted, I mean, Mike Trout will win MVP awards, I think, in his career. But you look at this season, you can't diminish, I don't care what anybody says, the RBI stat as to being an outdated stat. You get a guy who carried a team. I mean, they have other weapons, but they had a lot of guys who really vastly, going into the season, they thought they were relying on. The Brennan Bosch, everybody thought Brennan Bosch was going to have a breakout year. You thought Ryan Rayburn was going to have a breakout year. All these guys, and it was Yel Cabrera who just put the team on his back and carried.
Yeah, I mean, they're all valid points. I just think, I don't know. Trout gives you that spark. And I feel like, you know, getting on base and disrupting a pitcher's rhythm, those are the kind of stats that you can't really put into numbers. But I honestly think that if I had to pick, you think about situational hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And getting, you know, do you want a guy who hits a solo home run or do you want a guy who gets on base and extends the inning, you know, those kind of things. I don't know.
Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Still 5-1 Yankees. Looking at the bottom of the fourth inning here. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about baseball. We're going to get to baseball a little bit later on, but why don't we transition over to some NFL football finally here. The New York Giants will start out with their game against the Eagles was a game that I think a lot of Giants fans were pretty confident in going into the game. I know you had some, you had some concern, but I'm talking about most. You're not the idiot Giant fan that I dislike. I don't have any problem talking about the Giants with you because I do think they're a really talented team, and I like Tom Coughlin. But going into that game, I'm just surprised at the approach that they went. I'm surprised at the pass run ratio they went to, especially when you look at how the Eagles fared last year against the run, especially runs at the middle. We talked about Andre Brown and about the splits he was going to get. He got five carries, I think.
Five touches. I mean, that is just...
It didn't make any sense. But it's not even like they were feeding him at Bradshaw. I mean, I think they only ran the ball 20 times, 20 some odd times for the game. And against that wide seven defense, you wonder why they're not trying to go up the middle a little bit more. And it was like that throughout. I mean, I know that the Giants have for the last season and a half been a throwing team. But were you surprised that they didn't just say, you know what, we're in a tight game here. We could beat these guys on the ground. We could do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I could see Gilbride's perspective in that. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Asamoah. He's now like got the nickname Toast, and they figured they can exploit that. But it just like you said, that wide nine. I don't understand how you don't just run and run and run on that.
Yeah.
You know, and not getting Andre Brown touches, I just don't understand how you go from having a career day.
And the week before coming in the second quarter or late in the first quarter and rushing for what he did, I mean, he showed that he could do it.
And when he came into the game and he got his touches, he was all positive yards. He looked good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't understand it. You know, there were a lot of situations where I don't think Eli was as on as I would have liked.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't look like he
still
was
had his 300 yards that he had.
Yeah. But he didn't look like he was on top of his game for most of the. I think he missed some throws that he should have made. But it, you know, you can't get down too hard on him.
He's not the reason they lost that game. But that pick was
huge.
Huge play in that game. It's not like the Eli of 4 years ago where he, you know, just made a bunch of those. But he made that. That was the
The old Eli.
The Eli that that always sticks in my head. That I know and love. It just sticks in my head that he still makes those plays, which is why I say he's the anti-Romo typically, because he makes those bad passes in the first half, whereas Romo makes it in the second half. But, but even so, I mean, they get the ball there. You assume they're going to win that game. That's how the Giants have been.
Yeah, and the thing that that came out today was that Barden had a concussion that last drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were wondering why he had a bottom line, like a headlock.
Yeah,
but
that wasn't even one of those, like, plays you could kind of argue, like, it's a weird
like, come on! And then the replay, I was like, wow.
Wow, that happened.
Yeah, Brendan penalized twice.
Yeah, that really happened in that spot. But, you know, why didn't they run the ball on second down? You wonder that. Why didn't they try? I mean,
why didn't they kick on third down? There's a popular theory out there. Well, if you miss, if something goes wrong, you have fourth down to kick. But Tynes is not known to be Sebastian Janikowski.
Exactly.
Nailing.
And they're talking about if there's a bad snap. Yeah. That's the thing. There's a bad snap. There's a bad snap on a 54-yard kick, and that holder is now. First of all, I don't understand. You have no timeouts left.
Yeah.
So if there's a bad snap, You how are you ever going to get it off another kick?
Yeah.
And nobody mentioned that on any radio program. And they're defending it. If there was a bad snap, the game's over.
Yeah.
What were they going to do?
Yeah.
Even if he did somehow set up, now they're kicking a 63-yard or whatever it is. By the time the guy gets down, there is not a chance in the world with that amount of time left. That's what I don't understand, the theory behind it. Why not try a sideline play? You know, it just seems like it happens all the time. Like, why not just give it a shot? An extra 5 yards, they would have made that kick. So it's like that made no sense. Don't give me the third down because the game was over. If you had another timeout,
I was really surprised. I mean, I figured might as well just try a 5 yard out or something like that. You know, the odds of it working are slim, but at least you're trying, and maybe there's an odd that, you know, at the time we didn't know Barton had a concussion, but an odd that you can match him up and throw it high and away, and you can come out with it for a 5 yard game.
And a penalty.
All they needed was 5 yards.
And in the NFL today, and the Giants do it better than anybody. Throw the ball up down the field. Try to get a one-on-one matchup, and you know, have a guy running out on one side. But if you see a one-on-one on the other side, throw it up.
Yeah.
Because you know there's a good chance these guys aren't going for the pick at that spot, and so you throw it up. You hope you come down with the ball where you got your receiver goes to make a play, or you get a penalty. I just don't understand I don't understand the theory of that at all. And nobody talks about that. They just kind of say, well, there's two trains of thought. There's the try to get a little bit more, or the fumble. Am I missing something? If there was a muff snap, that's game over.
Yeah, and do you think coaches are going to start reevaluating the whole icing?
They should.
Maneuver?
We talked about it last week.
If you look at the odds, like you end up screwing your team by doing that.
Yeah.
The guy almost always misses the first one, or he gets blocked or something.
Yeah, and it's like do anything. If you're shooting a 3-pointer, wouldn't you rather have it? You get a 3-pointer, you miss it. Like, let me get that again. You're trying to shoot the putt. You're like, I missed that putt. Let me try another putt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're doing anything, any carnival game. You always do better on your second time, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't get. And Vic came out against it. You know, he said, I don't know why we got to get rid of this old friend. I agree with it. I mean, it seems to. I can remember the times it hasn't worked way more than the times it's worked. It's so these coaches that are obsessed with percentages and all this and the numbers, why do they keep doing it?
I don't know.
It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. But the main takeaway for me that I'm most concerned about, besides the injuries, because it looks like the injuries are taking over again, is the fact that we were unable to contain, to play containment. You know, there was a lot of hype going into the game, with a lot of talk between OC and LeSean McCoy. They apparently buried the hatchet now, but you saw OC just constantly get burned around the corner.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah,
I had a bet going with my buddy that I was watching the game with, and he was saying, you know, over under Giants have 3 sacks because the big knock on the Eagles coming in was their offensive line stinks.
Yeah,
and that's why Vic is constantly on his back, and you know, sure enough, he got knocked down, and he got hurried, and he got hit, but they had 1 sack.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because Justin Tuck was on, I think this is Michael Kay yesterday, he was on the radio yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, what offenses are doing to them now with quick drops, keeping a tight end in, chipping with a fullback or whatever they're doing. And they're like, you know, he was like, there's nothing we could do here. They're like, how do you combat that? And he's like, really, there's nothing we could do. If they're going to do that, it's impossible to get to the quarterback. And you say to yourself, well, if it's that unstoppable of an offense, it wasn't every offense just run that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If it's that unstoppable, okay, then we figured out the best how to combat, which everybody, all they talk about is pass rush, pass rush. It's the way you win in the NFL, pass rush, pass rush. Okay, well, the only, it's very simple. You just quick drops and you chip here and there. You know, there should be, shouldn't there, if that's what they're doing, they can get at the quarterback before people and they need to keep an extra guy in. How are they moving the ball at all then? You know what I'm saying? Like, is their secondary that bad? And he went, stopped just short of throwing his secondary on the bus. He said, well, we've had a lot of injuries to our secondary and this and that. But that being said, if that's how easy it is to stop, then why does anybody ever not do that?
Yeah,
it's just, I mean, for him to just throw in, throw out the white flag, like, if they're going to do that, we can't do our job.
You can see a lot of people trying to copy that blueprint for success. I mean, and it's, I don't know. You know, you can put the onus on the secondary and say that, you know, they need to come up big. But, I mean, they're just, like, Roll is hurt and Hosley's banged up and they got Co with injuries and they have, you know, although Stevie Brown, the guy filling in for Phillips, looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he, you know, I'm not worried about him so much, but it's that corner position that's going to be like a bugaboo for them for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just have to figure out maybe some new schemes, do some more stunts. I mean, there's got to be a way that you can take some pressure off of that secondary. And the one way to do it is, like we said with the Jets last week, was get up in the receiver's face, bump and run, and start sending people.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's kind of a silver lining in it and all is, I mean, you look at a team that's 2-2, 0-2 in the division. That's not how the Giants saw their beginning of their season going. And they have a tough schedule. You know, they got the Browns, and it gets very, very tough. But then you look at the rest of that division. You look at how the Cowboys played terribly, you know. You look at the Eagles are 3-1, and they seem like the ugliest 3-1 team. They've won three games by a total of 4 points, you know. But they beat some good teams, you know what I mean? So you look at them, and it's like nobody, everybody is so disappointed in the Eagles. But, I mean, are the Eagles the team? I mean, if you're as a Giants fan, what team are you scared of? Are you
the Redskins?
I was going to say, are the Redskins this team now that you're saying, you know, you had trouble with them last year. Clearly, they're better than they were last year. Are the Redskins the team you're scared of? I mean, can you see them in their division going 2-4, maybe, the Giants?
Yes. You know, and the first couple of weeks, I was like, oh, isn't that cute? The Redskins are, like, competitive, and RG3 is everything everyone, you know, said he would be. And now I'm starting to get – now I'm looking at, like, crap. Like, this is the team that we're going to have to battle for the division. And, you know, even though we are 0-2, you know, it sucks. But I don't know. After playing the Cowboys and Eagles, I'm like, yeah, we lost, but I don't think we're at full strength.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we played to the best of our abilities. And, you know, that seems to be the talk about the Giants, is that, you know, it's never the Giants that beat these teams. It's like the we beat ourselves mentality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think the Giants are going through a little bit of that right now where, you know, I don't think they're intimidated by the Cowboys or the Eagles. And I think they didn't really take it to those teams like they should have. And I'm honestly not worried about them. I'm worried about the Redskins. I mean, they just look really good. Alfred Morris looks good. RG3 looks good. And, you know, it's getting to the point now where I don't know that you can make the playoffs with a 2-4 divisional record. And
yeah.
You know, I can see them getting swept by the Redskins like they did last year. And there you go.
And that's banking on them beating the other two teams, you know, the other two times. Now, I don't know that there's another division in football where you could say all four teams, not one of them would surprise me if they – you can pick any combination of where they'll finish. Not any of those four teams would I be like, holy – at this point in the season, oh, wow, that's a shocker that the Redskins won a division.
The Cowboys, though, especially after Monday night, especially after they went into Seattle and got smoked, I don't know. I know they looked really good against the Giants, but I think they found a loophole, if you will, with Ogletree,
mm-hmm.
and just picking up part of the secondary there. But, I just don't see them doing well.
I agree with you. Looking at them, you say – I completely agree. You look at it and you say that team is the worst team, I think, in that division. But what I'm saying is I don't think it would shock me because I still – I'm a believer in Tony Romo. And I know the Dallas fans want to get rid of him. And there's people
calling him. He looked awful.
Looked horrible. Okay. But, I mean, out of those five picks, two of them clearly weren't his fault.
Mm.
Clearly. One of them hit guy right in the chest, and it bounced up. I mean, and so you look at that, but he is a guy who I've seen take over games. There's not a lot of quarterbacks in the league where you could say everything else could fail around him and he could just win a game. Now, he could also single-handedly lose a game,
yeah.
but that's why I'm saying it wouldn't shock me if Tony Romo strung together a couple games where he consistently threw 300 yards and three touchdowns. You know, I could see that happening. He's an erratic quarterback. When he's hot, he's as good as anybody. And so it wouldn't shock me for the Cowboys to all of a sudden flip a switch and you see their secondary play like they played against the Giants.
I mean, Dez Bryant
is horrible.
From across the board, everyone was like, Dez Bryant sucked. He put up some monster
yeah.
numbers.
He had 100 and something yards. Yeah.
He catches some 100 something yards in a touchdown or something like that. And, you know, you start to think, well, if he just got his act together,
yeah,
what kind of team that could be?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. That's what I mean. I mean, any one of those four teams, I won't even begin to start predicting it. I'm just saying, as a Giant fan, it's just amazing. And we're going to transition over to the Jets. But they were a 2-2 team that's in second place, 0-2 in their division. Actually, they were in third place technically because they were losing the tiebreaker there to the Cowboys at this point. But there seems to still be a lot of optimism. You look at their two losses and you say, well, the first one was almost not a fluky loss, but like you said, this Ogletree guy came up and was unbelievable. They still had a chance there in the fourth quarter. You look at the game against the Eagles and you say, we could have won that game. You know, it's just a couple of plays here and there. And so they're 2-2, but an optimistic 2-2, even though if you were to say at the beginning of the season, you definitely didn't see them going 2-2 to start this season. You thought they would have won one of those two games in the division for
sure. Oh, yeah. I had them at 3-1. You know, losing at home, I don't know what their deal is with playing at home, but they just don't seem to have that same...
Yeah, I agree with you.
...same kind of mentality that they do on the road. And, you know, I've said this multiple times in the past. I think they just embrace and they love that underdog mentality. And when they're at home and they have that crowd surge, it's like they don't feed off of it like they should.
Yeah.
You know, they have Cleveland coming up, which I think... I mean, God.
They got to win that.
That's a huge trap game because, you know, I'm looking at Cleveland and I see they just took on a Ravens team on Thursday night. Now, granted, Ravens were on a real short week. I mean, they played Sunday night and had to come back Thursday.
And an emotional game Sunday night where it was close. You know,
real refs were back, so there was that going on. And, you know, Whedon almost leads them back.
Yeah.
Because that stupid penalty on the Ravens D lineman at the end of the game. So, you know, I think the Browns are going to try and build off of that momentum, and they had a long time to prepare for the Giants as well.
Yeah. No, yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't think that's a game, and luckily I've already taken the Giants in my knockout pool, so that's a game that everybody, I'm assuming, is going to take, so
yeah.
I got to be rooting hard against the Giants here because I don't have them. But, yeah, you got the game against Cleveland at home. You got to assume that's a win. But you go out to San Francisco.
Yep.
Then you got Washington at home.
This next, I mean, Christ, there's not a break in the schedule. I mean, I know there's, you know, parity in the NFL and anything can happen, but take a look. Niners, at Niners, we host the Skins, at Dallas, host the Steelers, at the Bengals, which that's not a pushover. I mean, they're gonna be good. We host Green Bay, at Washington. New Orleans is going to turn their shit around.
Yeah.
Sorry. Excuse me.
You just swear to
that? At Falcons, at Baltimore, hosting Philly, there's not one gimme in that whole lineup.
After the Browns, there's not one gimme. I mean, you got to sit there and say, we got to beat Dallas. You can't get swept by, you know, Washington, so there's two wins there. You're at least going to split there.
And if anything, you want to at least try and take conference games.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to say, okay, we accept losses, lose to Pittsburgh and Cincy, but don't lose to Green Bay, New Orleans, Atlanta.
Yeah.
Those are the games you have to win because the conference record, when it comes down to tiebreakers, that's what's going to...
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance you're going to look at... After this game against Cleveland, you're not going to see the Giants as a touchdown or more spread for the rest of the season, for sure.
No.
And if anything, I mean, you know, when Washington comes in to play them, barring some unforeseen couple weeks, I mean, that's going to be a 4-point spread, 5-point spread, and then everything else is going to be down near a field goal for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
If anything, I mean, when they're going to Atlanta, you know, that's going to be, you may be staring in the barrel like a, you know, getting 6 points type game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be tough, man. And
that Atlanta game should be heated, too, because Roddy White has been running his mouth off about Cruz and how, you know, he doesn't deserve all the credit he gets and that, he he's a slot receiver, and so therefore he should be. You know, he doesn't play with the big boys on the outside. And Roddy White is just one of the dumbest dudes in the world.
Yeah, he's good, though, man.
He's so good, but he's just dumb because it's like a slot receiver, that's no easy catch and release. You know,
the skills just like anything
else. You have to go over the middle, and you have middle linebackers.
There's plenty of outside receivers that can't play slot. It's a whole different thing. There's two different positions, and that's what they should be, you know, classified as. I agree. It's going to be tough. Plus, don't forget about the, you know, how the Giants ended the Falcons' season last year, basically in embarrassing fashion.
Yeah.
They got that game circled on their calendar for sure.
I mean, yeah, but look at all the ones they have circled. 49ers want revenge.
Yeah.
The Packers want revenge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I think the...
You know, I'm sure the Baltimore Ravens figured they, you know, we should have been in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We should have been us, and we would have beat them. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, everyone on this schedule has a reason to hate them except the Browns.
Yeah, and the Browns. Just out there being the Cleveland Browns, man. All right, so, you know, going into this week, they got to win this game. Let's transition over to the Jets. Now, I'm going to kind of let you steer this ship a little bit. I was at the Meadowlands for this game. I will tell you.
Oh, Michael.
I will tell you this. I'm up in Section 328, and I said I went there. We sold our tickets, two of our tickets, me and my buddy who split them, to two Niners fans. And I had guys as we're driving up. It's actually Tony's brother, big Niners fan. And he's like, you know, am I going to get killed for wearing my – he had a Roger Craig jersey. I said, to be honest –
no one's going
to
kill you for wearing Roger Craig.
I said, to be honest, that's all kind of a myth anyway. Maybe we'll – unless you're an idiot.
I think you should have rolled with the Ronnie Lott jersey.
Yeah, and cut his finger off. Cut his finger off on the way up there. I'm like, no, I'm like, you might get – you know, people will bust your chops a little bit. I said, it'll actually be worse for you if the Jets go way up. Because if the Jets are down, this is how, you know, how it is. We walked into my section, and I'm telling you without a doubt, 30 to 40% of our section was in Niners red, like that same red jersey. All this, it's like they sent a memo around Section 328. I was shocked at how many Niners fans were in the stadium. You could look around; the Niners chants from the first quarter on were loud. You could see the Jets fans. So off of even their win, and we talked about it. There's never been a 2-1 angrier fan base.
Yeah,
and there hasn't been, and it was like. You know, in the parking lot, everyone was talking about there had no chance. It was, like, amazing. It hasn't been like that in at least 4 years. Probably more than that, before Favre, even. Because it was always, like, you know, we're the big, tough Jets. Even, you know, before Rex got there, there was a confidence. There was a bravado in the Jet fan. It was to a T. There wasn't one person that I – and we got guys at tailgate that we gave speeches, and they stand on top of the trucks and they give speeches. And it was just like they were bashing the Jets.
What was the theme of the speech?
It kind of – most of the speeches that I saw, and I'm going to say this delicately, San Francisco's got a culture to them.
A lifestyle.
A lifestyle, an alternative lifestyle.
I'm going to say alternative.
So I will say that most of the speeches tended to emphasize their lifestyle.
Right, yeah.
And how are we going to lose the people of that lifestyle?
Yeah.
So that's how I mean, and I don't condone it, but that would be – and I will say – that was how actually all the speeches. That's all we had to say.
Yeah. Like,
well, at least you don't live there. So that was like their speech. It wasn't anything. It wasn't anything we were going to do to them to win it. I haven't seen the Jets like that in 4 or 5 years. A Jet fan base like that.
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly it turned.
Yeah.
It really has. So I'm going to go fresh on my drink. Why don't you take me through that game? Tell me what you saw. Did you watch the whole game?
Well, so I was at a bar. I was watching the Pats game mostly with a buddy who was a Patriots fan, and I was kind of keeping an eye on the Jets game, one eye on the Pats game, and I was just amazed that, you know, and I haven't really watched a lot of 49ers highlights,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that they're running Colin Kaepernick, as the Wildcat offense, I think that's a giant middle finger from Jim Harbaugh to Rex Ryan. Giant middle
finger. Oh, I think so, too. When it came into game, we were like, what is happening?
I've never heard this dude's name in my life.
Yeah.
And now there are rumors going around that he's going to supplant Smith. That they're looking to replace Smith with this dude.
No, it's a dumb rumor. That's a dumb rumor. Go ahead. Take it over.
But so, you know, for me watching that game, you know, you're obviously going to have a lot of people pulling for Tebow, rooting for Tebow. The chance starting. And I don't know if the Jets took them lightly. There were a lot of people. There was a – what's his name? I think Carlos Rogers, during a radio interview recently, said that the Jets players were just quitting. Just straight up quitting, that there was no fight in them. You know, and Rex Ryan's trying to play it off like, oh, it's fatigue. And it's like, come on, Rex. This is not week one. We're in week four. Like, by now you should be conditioned. There should be no problems with, you know, running up and down the field. Now, honestly, you know, the three and outs don't help. And, you need to give your defense a breather. But I know we keep saying this. I don't know how you blame Sanchez. His completion percentage is horrible. And it's a matter of, you know, they just, you know, and Holmes is now out for the season with a Liz Frank, which Strahan had in 2006, and he's done, like, for the season. I appreciate the fact that they've refused to put Darrell Revis on IR because they think they're going Super Bowl. Kind of laughable.
Kind of
laughable. And, I mean, John Connor's now holed up with a hamstring or something like that. And, you know, for the Jets to get back to that ground and pound that they think is going to be the formula for success and to be the blueprint for them to win games, I really do think you got to line up and you got to send Connor right into the heart of the defense and take linebackers head on so they can you can create something. But again, it's the fact that what Tebow had one pass.
Yeah, and the guy fumbled and got hurt.
You know what I mean? So I mean, I don't think that you need to start Tebow. I don't think you need to go to him exclusively. But the fact that they're not. I mean, you see that blitz pickup? That was a hell of a blitz pickup.
I did. I mean, I didn't see it live. I didn't see it, but I did see it. Now, here's my thing about Tebow. And there were some people chanting Tebow, but surprisingly enough, the people that were chanting it, a lot of those people were actually the Niners fans. It was almost like a joke, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know any Jet fan still, and I said that from the beginning, no Jet fan that I know says he should be the quarterback. I did actually hear a lot of people calling for McElroy. I said that too. A lot of people, and these are knowledgeable season ticket holders. They're like, let's just give this McElroy guy a shot. Now, you say all you want, but he has had a lot of success in the preseason over the last 2 years. It's preseason, that's all fine and good. But he's a winner. He's a winner in college. He could manage the game. That people see him like a Chad Pennington type quarterback. You know, limit mistakes, just kind of get the ball out of your hand type thing. Maybe that's the type of guy you need when you don't have a ton of playmakers, but you could just kind of chip the ball down the field. I don't think they're ready for that yet, and I don't think that
that looks like a bug from a horror movie.
It just survived. It just came back to life.
It's like the Terminator bug.
Oh my God, it's angry at me. So my thing is this. I don't think you can make the decision after. And people are talking about one more bad game. He's not going to play well against the Texans. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Yeah, why would you ever start Tebow against the Texans and think that? I mean.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Where is your head at as a Jets fan knowing that they are without their quote-unquote top receiver the rest of the season? They're out without their top cornerback. They got a running back, a cornerback. They have
Well, he's back to running back now. They signed the guy who got arrested the last two times. The guy Aaron Berry from the Lions who got cut from the Lions. The Lions are a Wild West show. He got cut for being too bad from the Lions.
Yeah.
But
I mean, at this point, you got to go like the 1989 style and just hire convicts, like straight up guys that just got released and just see what kind of intensity they can bring to the field. You know,
because they're completely lackluster. I agree with the. I mean, it was clear that they quit when they see that guy Kyle Williams come in the game and bust off a 20-yard run. That's when I left the game. I never leave games early.
I was going to ask you. Stay.
I turned to my buddy who we never leave the games early. And I was like, you know what? And we were with two Niners, like I said, and they bought the tickets. So I'm like, you don't have to leave. We're not leaving. You know, we'll just go sit in the parking lot and have some drinks because I can't watch this anymore. Because it was so obvious today. I mean, when you get a Jets defense that gives up 245 yards on the ground, I don't care about them being tired and that. They weren't even trying.
And they held Gore in check. 21 carries, 62 yards. It's not, you know, incredible. It's like a three-some average. I think three-yard average.
Yeah.
But, like, Kendall Hunter breaking off runs, and you have, I think, you know, Colin Kaepernick caught them completely off guard with the Wildcat. But
to get back to Sanchez, and I've been a Sanchez defender, and I agree that to the point that it's not all his fault because there isn't a lot there, he still did miss passes. There was a wide open out on a third down and six to Santonio Holmes that sticks out in my mind, and he makes that like, oh, I thought you were doing this. Clearly, he was running the sticks and turning out Mark. Hit him in the chest. Even on the play where Santonio Holmes got hurt, he was wide open. It was an inaccurate pass, which made him fall down and whatever he did to his foot. I was optimistic that he was going to have a decent game here because of how he played in the second half last week, and he was able to throw for 200 yards after the half, and he's like, okay, he didn't go down into the tank. He went to the tank this game like he did against the Steelers, where it was just like nothing was going to happen. You knew nothing was going to happen. And I just don't think that a move to Tebow solves anything, and if anything, it makes things a lot worse.
Well, we've said this before, but Sanchez has been set up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Tebow, I mean, Tebow's the kind of guy where you looked at what he did in Denver, and I think a lot of his success stemmed from the fact that Denver has a really good offensive line, and that, you know, he was able to run that shotgun option offense where, you know, he can either hand it to McGahee and he can bust it off, or fake it to McGahee and hit Demaryius Thomas or Decker on a slant or something.
Listen,
like that.
He's done nothing in the game.
Yeah.
He's done absolutely nothing. It's because they don't have a running game or anything like that. I mean, the Denver running game was legit last year,
yeah,
which makes you able to do different things, which actually opened up some of his deep passes.
Right.
They don't have the threat of him throwing deep, even though they are stacking the box, because it's like, okay, you're not gonna run on us anyway.
Right.
So it's like there is nothing there. Now, the one thing I could hope for, and you know how much I hate D'Antonio Hall. And I was, as a sidebar, I was up in Massachusetts yesterday. I had to go up there for work. I was in Millbury, Massachusetts. So I'm listening to WEEI, which is their sports talk.
Yeah.
Which is, it's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit, these guys. I mean, they all got the thick New England accents. They're like openly racist and just like crazy yeah. people. And so I'm listening to them, and to hear them make fun of D'Antonio Holmes, what made me laugh out loud as I'm driving, and they're like, you know, they don't even know his injury. He stubbed his toe, and he just handed the ball, and he really did. I mean, once he got hurt, he was like, ow, here's the ball.
Yeah.
And he just threw it up there, and now his season's over. Now, the one saving grace I could possibly have is that you go back to the Giants, where after Shockey got hurt, we had Tiki Barber out of his ear. I'm telling you, he's not a playmaker anymore. He's not a guy. There's still not times. I mean, he is leading the team in receptions and all that.
Yeah.
But he's still not taking a slant like Victor Cruz and taking it 80 yards.
Right.
He's not that guy anyway. I would say Jeremy Curley is their playmaker.
Yeah.
So now you got Jeremy Curley, who came up with Sanchez. You know, he was a rookie last year, so he only knows Sanchez. You got him there to make some plays. Hopefully you get Keller back, and it's questionable. I could see that actually Sanchez playing better this week without D'Antonio Holmes in his ear. And I said that when we were talking about cutting him. And I'm like, they should just cut him. I don't eat the money.
Yeah.
Because it'll be addition by subtraction, like they always say. He is a cancer on this team. He is a cancer in that offensive huddle. You could see how much, I don't care what they say, you could see when he comes back from an incomplete pass, a poorly thrown ball, how much those two guys hate each other. Sanchez hates him, and he hates Sanchez so much.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you that their season wasn't going anywhere. It's not like it was like they were, oh, we lost this, you know, we lost our number one wide receiver. We lost Andre Johnson. He's not an Andre Johnson.
Right.
He's a solid number two wide receiver on a team. He's not a number one. He got paid too much when they signed him, you know, the extension, the $15 million extension. So I'm not saying that they're a better team without him. And everybody was crying the blues about how bad they're, and their receiving corps is horrible. And they got to look to bring somebody in. And they brought in some guy today from the ex-Jaguar, because they're known for
who
hates Revis.
They apparently called him overhyped last season.
Yeah, called him, and I remember every Jeff going, who the hell is this guy? Well, now he's a Jet. That's the guy that they bring in. But, you know, you got to hope Stephen Hill is able to do some things.
For me, I don't know how you're able to keep your chin up, because it just seems like there's one or two problems that you can kind of focus on or game plan for. It's like, it's everywhere. It's spreading
everywhere.
Tell me
what their strength is. Tell me, like, what on the Jets is a strength?
I don't know. I mean, they pointed out, I was watching a highlight the other day, there was the punt block.
There's one guy.
San Francisco rushed two dudes.
Yeah.
And they blocked the punt.
Yeah.
So
that's how you know they quit. And that was the game was over.
Exactly.
That was when, actually, it's funny, so I'm walking out of the stadium at that point. And I looked at it, I'm like, how is it 34-0? And I honestly thought that Tebow threw a pick or something. I'm like, how did they get it? I saw a 1 yard run. And then I get to my car, I turn on the radio, and they talk about the play. And I'm like, oof. So, I mean, what do the Jets do well? They don't have weapons on offense. They don't have a quarterback that I still, you know what? I'm telling you, and I'm 100% confident, this is probably Sanchez's last season as a Jet. I'm beginning to realize
that.
He is going to be, I'm telling you, he's going to catch on somewhere else. He's not going to be a consummate Pro Bowler. This guy's going to win somewhere else.
Yeah.
He's going to be put into a system like Alex Smith out in San Francisco, where if you give him some weapons and you give him some time, he could do things and win games.
Yep.
He's just not the type of guy that could just, with nothing around him.
Right.
Like what I talked about Tony Romo. Tony Romo's got his fault, but at his strength, that's not something that that Mark Sanchez is. He can't do that.
Yeah.
That he just can't do it.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of quarterbacks that are very successful that can't do that. I mean, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer, there's plenty of guys. Matt Hasselbeck. You don't, you know, it's a different skill set. I think this guy could be a winning quarterback in the NFL. He's proven that he can be. I mean, he had a winning record going. He still has a winning record for his career. So it's not like, he, you know, he's, and it's going to happen. He's not going to be a Jet. You know, things to say, but, you know, it just, I could see that happening. And like I said, man, the Cowboys want to get rid of Tony Romo. I welcome Tony Romo on the Jets with open arms.
Yeah.
That's the type of guy that this team needs, because there's so many weapons away from being good that it's not like you bring a rookie quarterback. Say they somehow get a draft and they bring in Matt Barkley or something like that.
Yeah.
He's going to be horrible. What is a rookie quarterback going to do under all this stuff?
They'll bring in Geno Smith.
Well, dude, I'll say he did over
600 yards in a game.
Yeah. Yeah, he had more touchdowns than incompletions. But I'm telling you, it's just a recipe for disaster. So
I think it's just a systemic problem that is from the top down. I mean, there was an article today about not today, but saying that the Jets owner admits he'd rather see Romney win than his own team.
You know, how much that made me mad. And all these guys up in Boston, shockingly, like I said, they're complete racists and they're saying some horrible things. But they were like, actually, I like that country first, this and that. That's ridiculous. Imagine your boss and your job saying, I'd rather, you know, even I don't care what it has nothing to do with politics. Yeah. Has to do with it. This guy owns the Jets. You got your fan base.
This is your baby. I mean, this is like your I don't want to say cash cow because it makes it sound impersonal, but this is supposed to be your second family, if you will. You know, this is you purchased this team. You want to see this team succeed. You want to
no owner in the NFL would say that.
You want to see it be profitable. And I mean, I'm sure there's like two or three owners.
Say that out loud? No way.
Oh yeah, yeah. They wouldn't say it out loud, but they would definitely think that.
Say it out loud. He said it out loud, like matter of factly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what if my boss? You know, I work construction. My boss would say, I'd much rather see Barack Obama win than my company do well. And I'm sitting there as an employee going, well, what the hell am I out here busting my ass?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on here? Like, you know?
Unless Barack's got some secret incentive earmarked, you know, pork whatever for us. You know,
it's just a stupid thing. It has nothing to do with whether it's Romney or Obama.
It's a direct correlation. Like, if elected president, I will let the Jets win.
Yeah. It's just so stupid. And it was such an easy question to answer, you know, PC-wise. It's like, you know, I hope that, you know, Mitt Romney wins, and I hope the Jets, you know, you don't have to answer that question.
I feel like the whole team needs a media relations course, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's the owner.
They all need to know.
Are you that stupid, Woody? Oh, my God, that actually made me, it was like I was finally calming down from the game, and I hear that.
You think it's Mark's last season? I think it's going to be Rex's last season as well.
I don't know. I think that the injury bug that's hit the Jets is going to give him a pass. I really do.
Yeah.
But you're going to say, oh, they lost their best player and, quote unquote, their best offensive weapon. I think it's going to get that. And I do think they have enough easy games. Not easy games. They're going to win six games, seven games. I don't think they're going to finish 2-14. So I don't think you're going to fire Rex Ryan for going 6-10 when you lose best offensive.
You can guarantee that they're going to go 2-14.
Well, I think they win this week.
Hey,
all right. Well, so you know they got a ridiculously.
You heard Mike. Take your next paycheck and put it all. Let it ride on the Jets.
Money line. Bingo, bango. I'm telling you, I'm going with. I am forever the optimist. Addition by subtraction. Get rid of the cancer. They're going to be a little bit more cohesive. They got to run the football somewhat. Everybody knew that the ground and pound mantra was BS.
I got two words for you.
Mm-hmm.
Tiki Barber.
There you go. Shocking. All right. Let's go. Can we just get done with the Jets?
Well, I have two more things.
Of course you
do. I have like eight more things.
We're just going to close out with the Jets, apparently.
No, the Texans. I'm a guy that will begrudgingly admit when I'm wrong. I was completely off on the Houston Texans.
You weren't about them?
From day one. No, yeah. I said that they were going to miss the playoffs. It was kind of like one of my bold predictions.
I loved them.
I thought they were going to miss the playoffs. I didn't see Schaub staying healthy. I didn't see Arian Foster staying healthy. And they have far exceeded my expectations. And they're now their favorite to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they're a complete team. They really are. Two good running backs. Andre Johnson. Teams roll over them, and he fantasy-wise, he doesn't perform like he wanted to because all the defensive attention is going towards him, but they got some other weapons there. They got Schaub. They got, J.J. Watt on defense. They got a bunch of defensive playmakers. And I told you when they lost Mario Williams, they still got other pass rushers there. They're a legit team, man, and I loved them. I had them in my power. Remember, you didn't have them in your top 10. That's right. And I had them like four or something like that.
I don't think I've ever been more off on a team than I was with Houston. I didn't see it come together.
They're your Oakland A's, man. They're your Oakland A's. We all get one, man.
A great way.
Yeah, they're legit. It's just a terrible, terrible matchup. It's like terrible timing because you come off of the game that you just had, and then you go play a tougher team, you know, on Monday night. It's just, man, I don't know. What the Jets need to have happen is they have this defense, like I told you last week, that they need to pressure the quarterback. They got guys like Cromartie who can be a playmaker on defense. They got Curley, who could be a playmaker on punt returns. They have, Joe McKnight, who could be a playmaker on kick returns. They need points from non-offensive people. They really do, and I think they could get it. You know, that's all they need. You look at the Bills game. You look at the, even the Dolphins game when they had the pick six. That's what they need. So there is some hope for them because they do have explosiveness on special teams. They just got to be super aggressive on defense. I think they got to be, it's got to be.
It's time to pin your ears back and just, get hog wild with it.
That's it, man. Make plays.
Yeah.
That's it. They're not going to lose a lot of 10-7 games like they thought. It's going to be, you're either going to lose 34-0 or you're going to go out there and shock the world with some plays.
Yeah, and I think Rex needs to do, the reverse lap band surgery. I think the players responded better when he was a little fatty.
He should have gone, he took 2 days off, Monday and Tuesday. He should have gone in today. Was just like, it's Monopoly time at McDonald's. He just went in with a bag full of sauce McMuffins, and he just looked at it. They all thought they were going to get one, and he should eat 25
just
sausage McMuffins.
And
that's the whole meeting. Not say a word. Just eat 25 sausage and egg McMuffins, crumple the bag, throw it at Bart Scott, and walk out.
Yeah.
That's what I would do. Now, I'm not a coach. That'd be my suggestion for restaurant. All right, can we do Dave's, please?
Yeah.
Can we stop talking about the Jets? Dude, are you serious? Everyone's favorite. We're not going to get a say what, so you got some time to play with here.
Yeah, I mean, people might say, dude, are you serious after hearing your optimism? I don't know how you're still optimistic, but...
That's how I live my life, man.
There are plenty of other stories around the globe on the internet that'll make you say, dude, are you serious? One, for instance, is, Dwight Howard. He was a former Orlando Magic player. He's now at the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yep.
It's kind of a two-part, dude, are you serious?
I like those.
You
kicked us off with a dude. Are you serious?
With a two-timer. There are reports out of Orlando that the Magic are going to miss Dwight Howard's farts. They're going to miss Dwight Howard's farts. Apparently, there's a guy, Glenn Davis.
Big Baby.
Yeah.
Big Baby Davis. Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
He's talking about the most important thing that Dwight did for the Magic. Glenn Davis was asked what the Magic will miss most about Dwight Howard. Davis's answer, Dwight's flatulence. The thing we're going to miss most about Dwight is his farting ability. Great farter. He can fart. He can fart loud. The loudest farts, silent farts. So he's got range as a farter. So he's got the explosive, drop the bomb, mushroom cloud fart. And then he's got the don't tell anyone.
Okay. Now, I don't even know where to go with this. I will tell you this, and you're going to think, maybe you'll think less of me as a man, but this is the truth. This is the truth. I don't find farts funny. And I know that everybody, I don't like it. I don't like when.
That's why I apologize. Before we got on the air.
I'm not a fart guy. I don't like it.
Before we came on the air, I farted. And I apologize.
That was right, actually, as we were
five. And I looked at your face, and you were like, you accepted it, but you weren't happy about it at all.
No, I've never been a guy who thinks it's funny. Yeah. Me and my wife, we have a no-fart policy.
Really?
And we've been married. I've been together with my wife for 15 years.
Wait, what happened? You, Dutch ovened her one night and she just punched you in the throat?
No, it's me that does it. She'd be all about it. I'm like, no, I don't play that game. I like to keep things. I like to keep a little mystery there. I don't need to know that. So we don't fart in front of each other at all. I don't do that. I don't play that. I don't like that game.
Because usually with couples, that's the test. You take fart.
Yeah, we're still on. It's like our first date.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, keep it fresh.
That's it.
And plus, the laundry will probably be better for both of you.
100%.
You don't have to worry about streaks or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't believe in it. It's not part of who I am. Okay.
So wait, so you go to, like, if you have to go, if you have to release and let go, what do? You just go, you walk in the bathroom?
What if you do, what if you do it in a meeting? You just don't fart.
I don't know. I get, like, you know, there's, like, cramps and stuff. Or you get, like, a hurt stomach.
I don't do it. I mean, what would you do at any point in your life? You're on your first date. What do?
I let it go silently.
And soap?
And just, keep your fingers crossed. The fingers.
Did I have a Baconator? When's my last Baconator? I don't know. I don't play that game, and my friends know.
Sometimes I just like to do it, and I just like to stare right in her eye. Like, I dare you to say something.
Yeah. No.
This is me.
It's part.
Take it or leave it.
Say no.
No. There's a video going around now. You think farts are disgusting?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty nasty about what I'm about to tell you.
Yeah.
What's your take on Boston? Well, you're not a hockey guy, but you know, if you had to picture a Boston Bruins fan.
I mean, you got a picture in your head of a Boston Bruins fan. They got the obnoxious accent. They're just, I'm seeing, not necessarily red hair, but blonde hair, red hair, just loud.
Yeah. Just angry at the world.
Just things never really went their way.
Probably never says no to a challenge, right?
No. Not a guy you really want to challenge. Because they even if you're much bigger than them, they will fight until they're dead. That's how I picture a Bruins fan. So what do you got?
So a Bruins fan, and there's absolutely no backstory on this, which is kind of ridiculous, but I'll just leave it.
Makes it better. Because in Boston, whatever your story is, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's just Jimmy.
Yeah. A Bruins fan licked the entire New York City subway railing for $1.
I mean,
I know times are tough, but.
What's funny about this is when it got found out that he was like, make sure you say I'm a Bruins fan. Like, why is he just a Bruins fan?
He's probably wearing a Bruins jersey.
So he's a Bruins jersey guy.
Yeah.
And the video's been removed.
Yeah. The guy was like, oh, crap, I'm now an internet sensation.
There are, like, anti-Muslim videos out there that haven't been removed.
Yeah.
But this guy's video guy.
Ambassadors are being murdered.
YouTube's like, I can't have this on my
screen. Absolutely not.
YouTube's like, I don't think this is. I mean, we got kids looking at this.
Yeah. But the fact that it was a New York City subway railing, you know, for $1, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, what kind of, like, let's put a monetary amount on how far you would go with that.
Seven figures.
And that's seven figures?
For the entire, yeah. I don't know that I'd put my tongue on it for anything under five figures. Let alone lick it. Like, I might go, like a little, how's your father? It's a little bit, but for 10,000. You want to talk about licking an entire railing?
Licking the whole pole. I just can't imagine that.
It would be with me. It would be like, I wouldn't be able to sleep because every time I close my eyes, I think about it. It'd be haunting me.
You'd use the money to pay for therapy, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It would, you know, it'd be like that Monkey Claw book or whatever. It's like you wish for something. Like, I got this.
Jumanji?
Like,
no, I wasn't Jumanji.
No, I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't know what the book was.
Oh, we read some Monkey Claw book.
Where it was
yeah.
You wish for something, but every time you got it.
Something awful.
If you got it at some expense, it's like.
The movie The Box, where, you know, you had the box and there's a button in the box, and if you hit it, you get, like, a crazy amount of money, but someone dies.
Never saw that movie. Was it straight to DVD?
No, I thought it was good. But I'm the kind of guy that's into that psychological stuff.
I didn't make a whole movie out of it, but I like that. But, yeah, so. It'd be the same thing.
That's like a 2-second short film. One press button, no? Like, yeah.
Is someone gonna die? I don't want to do that. It has like 2 minutes of credits.
Yeah. And now for best film.
The Button.
So you're a big Brooklyn Nets fan.
Huge Brooklyn Nets fan. That's all I got going for me right now.
Now, would you press the button for the Nets to win, but someone would die? Nets would win the championship, but someone would have to die.
Why you put me in that spot?
that's a much longer movie.
That's the button, too. Man, I'll tell you, I got a lot of eggs in that Brooklyn basket right now. I'm very excited about the Brooklyn Nets right now. Already looking online for tickets. Would I want somebody to die for them? Probably not. But what are we talking? Just wanted me to talk about my love affair with the Nets?
No, but so apparently Mark Cuban bought the domain nets.com.
No, he didn't.
Because Brooklyn Jay-Z didn't have that kind of, you know, the visionary didn't have that kind of foresight to buy nets.com. He bought nets.com, and it's not live now, but it had a picture of Mark Cuban sticking his tongue out and saying New Jersey Nets, Brooklyn Nets, who knows what where their franchise is at, and had like Russian on there for the Russian billionaire owner.
I love Mark Cuban so much. How do you not love that guy? How's that guy not able to own the LA Dodgers?
So if I type in Nets.com, goes the Dallas Mavericks regular season tickets homepage. This guy has got some balls.
I love that guy. I love that. I mean, I love Prokhorov, too. So, I mean, I could see Prokhorov as like...
Do you see, like, a nice little rivalry?
This Mark Cuban. Yeah. Well, the Nets-Dallas rivalry. That's like Sox-Yankees.
Yeah.
Heated. That's great. That's a great story. How did I hear about that?
That's a great way to get it started. So, also, Mark Cuban was caught on video. You know the Gangnam Style dance that's sweeping the world?
Yeah.
It's the most viewed YouTube video.
It should be.
Yeah.
It's not viewed enough.
I was actually doing it at a bar, almost got kicked out. So apparently Cuban was caught on video at a bar doing the Gangnam Style dance. It was an Indiana University bar. Now, a lot of people will say, well, act your age, come on, be a man, like, you know, you're 30s. I don't even know how Mark Cuban is, like 30 some odd, 40?
I don't know. It's forever 30.
Forever 30. But, I mean, I know people look at him and they say D-bag. I've been called a D-bag. I figured I might as well follow in his footsteps and just start buying up domains and making
Let's
fun
do
of people.
It.
And they're college bars.
Why didn't we think of that? We could have had just gone to the Tri-State Sports guys. And I said, I love you, Ness.
So we got another two-part. This one's Eagles related. Michael Vick spent, we talked about Vince Young when he spent gajillion dollars, just blew it all away.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Vick spent $29 million in 4 years.
What 4 years? Like this past 4 years?
I mean, it's kind of hard to spend money in jail. I know that.
Well, I know, but I mean, he owes a lot of debtors. That's what I'm saying. If it's $29 million, like paying off the people he owed. But I could see that.
In a legal docs filed in his bankruptcy case, Vic made $31 million since he went belly up. That includes his Eagle salary and various endorsements and other business ventures. Apparently, the math is pretty simple. Vic had to pay a total of $29.6 million. Of that, $10.9 went to taxes, $9.2 went to creditors, which is absurd, $2.7 went to lawyers and accountants, and the rest is for various things, including child support and living expenses. All told, Vic is $1.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the big chunk of that money went to, you stick 9.2 and the 2.7, that's due to his legal issues. And then, you know, Uncle Sam's got to get his piece. What do you, I mean, that's Mike Vick just being Mike Vick, just making plays.
I think about all those dogs in heaven just laughing.
What about a dog?
Yeah. And then the second part of it
all
is
dogs
that,
go to heaven.
Yeah. LeSean McCoy used to say his last name while juking people in practice. McCoy!
No, he didn't.
McCoy!
Shady McCoy, I love you even more.
See, and now I want to hate him so much for what, but I kind of enjoyed his little back and forth with OC.
Of course. We talked about it last week. It's awesome.
And I hate that he kills the Giants, but I kind of love he says his last name while juking in practice.
Can you imagine that? Can you just imagine, like, you're some...
I can't, though, because I feel like I'm thinking about me in that situation where I'm, like, throwing. Like, am I, like, pumping and be like, flinch? And then, like, pumping.
Imagine being a practice squad guy, and you call your wife, you're your first day in practice squad, like, how'd it go? So you have this guy who says his name every time he jukes. Imagine calling your dad, hey, Neil, how was your first day at camp? The running back says his name every time he jukes, Dad.
I don't know. He's got to be good. I mean... You ever think he, like, missed time, and every time he goes, that people, like, he's going left.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, wait, that's got to come back and haunt you.
He's got to tell. It's like poker. He's got to tell.
Yeah. So, you know the Eric LeGrand, Rutgers player.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Great. Honorary member of the Bucks. And so apparently he sent a tweet to Lolo Jones, the Virgin, and he said that I guess he said he would beat her in a race, which, and so Lolo Jones started talking trash. She was like, I'll destroy you, blah, blah, like, you know, all those steroids go to your head, basically, and like, you know.
Is it possible she didn't know who he was?
She had no idea.
We are talking about, I don't like this chick, but I'm not a Lolo Jones fan.
you know, I, she goes, I race for money or Olympic medals. How you want to wager 40K? Just go ahead and write the check to Lolo Jones. And
good for her. You know what? Good for her. I was sick of her before the Olympics. I was sick of her at the Olympics. She cried. Remember how she bawled and everybody was so mean to her? You know what, Lolo Jones? If you don't know Eric LeGrand, then you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty big story. Even non-sports fans know about Eric LeGrand. And if somebody does this and you're like, you know, if you're responding to her, A, she must not have a lot of people tweeting her because it's like you just respond to anything. Or she's like, oh, this guy, what's he on? He plays on the Bucks because he's like a, you know, he signed the one-day contract with the Bucks. I mean, what an idiot. Lolo Jones, you're an idiot.
The best is she tells him, get checks for a concussion. Clearly you've been hit in the head because you aren't beating a track athlete. He didn't get a concussion. He got almost dead.
Yeah. He was touch and go for a little while there, Lolo. Yeah. Shut up, Lolo Jones. You're an embarrassment to our country.
Just get laid.
Yeah, right? My God.
So, France, do you remember the 2006 World Cup?
Sure.
I don't. But I remember one thing about it. That was Zidane. Not Billy Zane, Zidane.
Yeah.
Headbutting that dude.
Yeah.
Well, apparently France has gone ahead and erected a Zidane headbutting statue in the middle of Paris.
I actually saw that statue. Yeah, I did see that statue. It was on, I don't know, one of those ESPN shows, whatever it was. But yeah, I saw that, yeah. It's not a French world. People like to make fun of the French like they're soft. And that now they're like taking it back. Like,
yeah.
One time we headbutted a dude.
Yeah.
We're very soft internationally.
Yeah.
And we don't ever fight or anything, but we'll headbutt a dude when they're not looking. And we're going to celebrate it like he's their Rocky.
Yeah.
Freedom prize.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that. I think that's pretty cool, right?
It's not cool.
I think, like, there should be more of that. Like, why do we have to just glorify the good?
Who paid for this statue?
Probably Zidane.
Yeah, I mean, the French government, France... economy's not doing so great.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, it's not, you know, if they're spending any tax dollars on the headbutt statue in the middle of Paris, that's a bad thing. If, yeah. If $1 was spent on that, that's a bad thing.
See, I'm thinking that they should fly in the Jopa statue and have them headbutting Jopa.
You know what? They gave us the Statue of Liberty. We'll give you Jopa.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, that's
a fair trade.
It is. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, Fran. That's what I think. We should start that movement.
And then last but not least, talk about dedication. Alabama fans are probably the most dedicated University of Alabama fans. The Tide,
yeah.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
Probably the most diehard.
That's all they got down there.
That's all they got.
It's Roll Tide.
Yeah. Well, these guys apparently wanted to take a plane to the Ole Miss game.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up crashing it. Instead of being like, oh my God, we need to figure this out, they rented some cars and drove to the Ole Miss game and made it for kickoff.
That is fantastic. That is like Indiana Jones, like just
sort
of like James Bond. You just crash a plane, you're just like, I'm taking another thing.
Yeah.
You got a destination to get to.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. That's what America's all about.
Yeah.
You know what? The French, they got their head butters. We got guys who will cheat death to get to a Alabama
Ole Miss game.
That's it, man.
Yeah, so that's Dude, Are You Serious?
That was a great Dude, Are You Serious? And I really liked it. It was just a shade under 1 hour, which was good. So,
well, I was trying to compensate for say what. You know,
I loved it. Neil, I loved it. We got plenty of time. We got 12 minutes for our top 10. We didn't have a top 10 last week. This isn't a traditional top 10. We went... There's 10 things that made the playoffs in baseball.
Yeah.
We want to go quickly through one impact player. What's the one player that it can have the biggest impact on their team's chances? So I figure we'll just go right through it, and we'll go back and forth. We don't need to go – you know, it's not like a ranking system. So we'll start with the Nationals. For the Nationals, to me, I think it's Gio Gonzalez. And here's why. I think it comes down to everybody is going to say, well, this should be Steven Strasburg starting game one. If Gio Gonzalez goes out there and gets lit up, and I don't think he will because he's had a borderline Cy Young season. He's been great. You know, he's going to get plenty of votes for the Cy Young. But I think that there's so much riding on that first game for the Nationals. They need to win that first game. They went out Fantastic season, won the division, did all these things. But they lose that first game immediately. The next day, anyone's going to talk about the D.C. area and nationwide is going to be, see if Strasburg was there, they would have won that game. So that's why I put Gio Gonzalez there. And I think he'll step up to it. But he has so much pressure on him there, and I'm assuming he's starting game one. And that's why I put it. Who'd you have for the Nationals?
Well, see, I was hesitant to pick pitchers because I feel like they're only going to really affect one game.
Yeah.
But this is the one exception. I went with Steven Strasburg because, you know, not having him in the rotation is going to be – I think it's going to be huge. I know that they've been able to kind of keep up and be consistent and still win. But, man, he's like almost a guaranteed W and not
– Guaranteed 6-7 innings.
Yeah.
More importantly. So, I mean, that'd be like having, you know, Schilling and Johnson or, you know, Kane and Lincecum, and when Lincecum was good, that type of thing. I agree. I mean, that's a huge. I mean, imagine them rolling into the playoffs with those two guys at the top. Plus, they got some depth in their starting rotation. But having those two guys to roll out there in the playoffs, the National League.
Yeah, I honestly think it's going to come back to bite them. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to root against them because you want that theory to be wrong. I do.
Yeah,
as a sports fan. We'll go over to Cincinnati with the Reds. I'm going with Jay Bruce. I think that Jay Bruce is one of the streakiest players in all of baseball. He's been like that his whole career. Everybody keeps waiting for him to really be. I mean, he is a star.
Yeah.
I mean, they got the 30 home run guy, but he does go into these slumps where he's non-existent. And then there's times when he's hot. He's almost like David Wright in that.
Yeah, yeah.
In that respect, where when he's hot, he can go into a 5-game playoff series and hit 6-7 home runs.
Yeah.
That type of hot. But he could also go in a 5-game playoff series and have 2 hits. So I think that. You know, they have a lot of weapons on that team, obviously. They got a good pitching staff. They got a dominant back of the bullpen. But I think that, you know, if he just goes out there and throws up an egg, the Reds could be in trouble, even though they've kind of cruised through the regular season as a team to beat. I think a lot of it hinges on Jay Bruce. Who do you got?
I have my boy Todd Frazier.
Your boy.
My boy.
Local guy.
I think he's going to be a wild card in this one. I think that they're going to pay a lot of attention, obviously, to Joey Votto, and with all due, you know, rightfully so. Jay Bruce is going to be on their mind, but I think Todd's going to be a kind of guy.
Like the David Freese of this year, maybe?
Yeah. I think he's going to be the guy that's like always on base or always creating situations that
that's a very good pick. I didn't even think it's him, but yeah.
So, yeah, that's my guy.
Very good guy. Now, the Giants, I went with another pitcher here, and I went with Tim Lincecum.
Yep.
Because when you look at the Giants, they're always going to be thought of as pitching. And you got Matt Cain, who's been fantastic all season long. He's going to be your game one starter. I don't even know if Lincecum is going to be their game two starter. I don't know where he even fits into the rotation. He has improved somewhat in the second half, but there's going to be so much attention paid to Tim Lincecum, and they really need him to be, a dominant pitcher. If not dominant, at least be able to give you 6 innings, 3 runs. They can't have one of those games where he goes out, and he's had plenty of them, where he can't give you 2, 3, 4 innings.
Yeah.
So they need him to step up there. They don't have the offense that could just carry you. Although they got Posey, who's been great, and they got some other weapons there. But I think Tim Lincecum, I think their playoff hopes kind of hinge on him not blowing up. Give an ERA under 4, give 6 innings every start, and the Giants have a chance. If they can't get that out of Tim Lincecum, they're in trouble. Who do you got for the Giants?
Timmy as well, and it's totally hypocritical on my part because I don't know that you can place that much emphasis on a pitcher that's only going to be out there once or twice in a series, possibly.